What's up, guys? This is the 20th episode of Lost in the Sauce, Kansas City podcast. My name is Wesley Roche. I'm joined by my fellow Chiefs Wire writers and co-hosts, Charlie Goldman and Jack Dillon. We went on a little brief hiatus there as the Chiefs had two games in 5 days. It was kind of a rough two games. The Chiefs dropped two. Chiefs are now sitting at 5-2 on the season as they will take on the Denver Broncos this Monday night at Arrowhead Stadium. Broncos are 3-3. They're also coming off a two-game losing streak, so one of these guys are going to break this streak here, so we'll see what happens. Going into this game, there's a few storylines that we just kind of want to touch on a little bit more in detail. We've talked about them on the site a little bit, but we want to talk about it a little bit more. The big one, I think, is Steven Nelson's return. Nelson is currently on injured reserve and should come back on Monday. He's eligible to come back on Monday because guys who get on injured reserve can return after 8 weeks, and this Sunday is 8 weeks to the day he was placed on injured reserve, so the Chiefs kind of lucked out there by having a Monday night game and being able to bring Nelson in a week earlier than most people thought. So Nelson, he returned to practice Thursday afternoon. That's a good sign for his progression. We think it might be a good it's probably a good chance he plays on Monday. My question for you guys, Charlie and Jack, what do you think kind of impact Steven Nelson will make coming in and then through the stretch whenever he gets used to the game and stuff like that?
Yeah, so talking about this Chiefs secondary, I feel like it's kind of going to become a war of attrition where, you know, it's not so much Steven Nelson coming back as much as it's, you know, Philip Gaines not being on the field as much or not being leaned on, in big spots. I'm really comfortable right now with the Peters-Mitchell tandem out wide. And to an extent, you know, Eric Murray's coming along relatively well. And despite last week's performance, Ron Parker's been pretty solid. You know, and so the only part of that Chiefs secondary that I'm looking at that's really weak is that nickel corner spot. But it gets burned a lot because Philip Gaines, I mean, he's burnt toast this year, guys.
He still doesn't have confidence in that knee. That's what I'm seeing a lot with Gaines. For Nelson coming back, I think we're going to have to find out, you know, whether or not he's in shape, if they're rushing him back from this injury, or if he's really good to go. We'll find that out early. Last season, I think Pro Football Focus had him ranked as the sixth corner in the slot in their rankings. So, I mean, he's really good at that position. And if he can come back to form and be that guy, that'd be a huge boost for this Chiefs secondary. And if he's not quite there yet, I think the Chiefs got to mix it up a bit and see, you know, who they can play there other than Philip Gaines, because he was a huge problem against the Raiders, and he's really, like you said there, Jack, he's burnt toast this season. He hasn't played good. And I think our safeties need to improve as far as the secondary is concerned. They had just an absolutely atrocious game versus the Raiders, including Ron Parker. I'd say Ron Parker had the worst game of his Chiefs career against the Raiders, and was probably the worst safety on the field for the Chiefs, even with Daniel Sorensen and you know, Eric Murray playing, who's looking fairly fresh out there. It was not a good game for Chiefs safeties.
Yeah, the thing that frustrates me the most with the Chiefs' safeties is that the tackling has just been awful. And, I mean, I don't know, you tell me if I'm crazy or not, but do you think that Barry being gone actually affects the tackling of other players? Because I mean, like, I remember, like, missed tackling was somewhat of a problem last year. It wasn't that big, but this year it just seems to be a huge problem, and I'm not really sure why, but, I mean, especially in the secondary, nobody can seem to, you know, wrap anybody up.
When we're talking about this Chiefs secondary, though, I mean, they're all really young guys, you know, and so with the loss of Barry, I don't think that his absence, you know, necessarily causes other players to be, you know, worse tacklers, but it makes it show up more when there's not a guy like Barry who is always solid, you know. And with Murray, you're looking at a guy who, you know, came into the league at like 5'11". He may or may not be listed taller, you know, but from what I remember, he was about 5'11", you know, kind of skinny, you know, and so maybe not built to play safety yet, but, you know, injuries force him on the field, and that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's maybe what I was kind of trying to allude there, was Barry not necessarily not making people worse tacklers by not being there, but just the fact that, well, he's not there to make 60 to 80 tackles a year. And so whenever his production is out, then that production has to be filled by somebody. And so you kind of see those weaknesses. Like you said, you see those weaknesses kind of be more exploited whenever those guys are the ones that got to have to get that production instead of Barry. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Everyone's entitled to a bad game now and again. They're just going to happen. You know, they're all human. But, you know, I've seen better from all of these players before. Daniel Sorensen, Ron Parker, and even Eric Murray. I've seen them play better. So they're certainly capable of doing it. Whether or not Eric Berry not being there, I mean, we know this. He is the absolute emotional leader of the defense. So to an extent, that's going to have some sort of effect on the team, whether or not that shows up in the form of, you know, tackling or, you know, how they respond to adversity and stuff like that. It's going to show up in different ways. This game, it showed up in the form of they couldn't make a tackle to save their life. And they had a lot of really just simple errors, like, you know, not being able to get off of, you know, a press past 5 yards, like Ron Parker did at the end of the game there, that forced that first untimed down. Or, for instance, Ron Parker had another scenario where he couldn't get his hips turned quick enough. He had a couple of those in this game. He's not quite used to playing back deep so often, because, you know, even though him and Eric Berry kind of switched off in those roles, it seemed like he was a little uncomfortable doing some of the things that he was asked to do. So maybe with time, some of these guys will show up and it'll be a little better for him. We'll just have to wait and kind of see.
So as we're on the topic of injuries and people coming back from them, Nelson's not the only guy that could return from injury this week. The Chiefs have Mitch Morse and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. They're hoping to come back against the Broncos. And Mitch Morse, he practiced in full on Thursday, which is a great sign for him. LDT was limited participant, which, you know, is good that he's been limited. It's good that, you know, he's working back. We'll see in these next couple of days if he practices in full or not. That'll kind of give us an idea whether he'll be ready Monday. But it seems like Morse has a really good shot. So talk about the impact having Morse back on the field will be, and, you know, how you think he'll be able to do coming back into the game.
I think the big thing is going to be whether or not they throw him right back in at center, because contrary to maybe popular belief or opinion, he Fulton's been playing rather good at the center position, as far as, you know, blocking and whatnot is concerned. I mean, he's no Mitch Morse, but so do you throw Morse in there at right guard if Larry's not ready to play? Do you, you know, switch Morse and Fulton? I think no matter what, the odd man out is going to be Cameron Irving, the new guy, Cameron Irving. He's going to be the odd man out. the question really is who lines up there. I'm still not ruling out Larry playing yet. I think he probably could be good to go, but I think he needs to get in at least one full practice before then, which means tomorrow, which is probably the walkthrough, or maybe Saturday is the walkthrough. One of those days, they're going to want to see a full designation for him if he's going to play.
Yeah, I agree that Fulton hasn't been terrible at center. You know, he gave up the safety, was it 2 weeks ago now, where he put it through the end zone, which is what it is. You know, I mean, he's still relatively young. He's only like 25. He's been in the system for quite a while now, but I think that if Morse comes back this week, regardless of Larry comes back, I think that you put Morse at center and move Fulton over to right guard to take Irving's spot. You know, I mean, because I don't think it's a really good idea to change who's giving Alex the ball too much or any more than you have to. You know, and so I think that unless Andy and, you know, his staff think that Fulton has some kind of upside at center, you know, or some kind of potential where they had overlooked him for the past 3 years, I just don't see him pushing Morse out of that spot. Especially when he's played guard pretty much his whole career.
Moving the topic on to the other side of the line, I got an interesting question from a guy on Twitter, Mark Morin. I think that's how you pronounce your last name. Sorry if I messed it up. He asked if there's any insight on why defensive lineman Tano Passanio hasn't been playing on defense. You know, considering he's a second rounder, we know he's a project, but it seems kind of weird that he hasn't seen any time at all. So kind of wanted to address that a little bit.
I think the issue with Tano Passanio is I'm not sure that the team necessarily knows where they want to play him yet. You know, they list him as an outside linebacker. When they brought him in, I thought he was going to be playing defensive line straight up. Maybe they're going to try to cross-train him. I don't know that he really can do that in the 3-4. I don't know that he'll have the body type or the skill set to do it. I think you kind of got to pick your poison and go with it. However, if they have chosen a position for him, it's a clear indication that he's too raw. He's not ready as far as his football understandings are concerned and as far as where his body is at to be out there on the field every down. Now, if we get, you know, a ton of injuries, we'll probably see him. He's on the roster for a reason. But there's got to be something to it, more so than meets the eye.
Yeah, so I always go back to the interview that I did with Tano's college coach, Mark Ferrante. And at Villanova, you know, Tano was playing more that, like, wide nine, like, you know, way out in the five tech and, you know, playing with his hand in the dirt. You know, and it's kind of like Dee Ford's transition from a hand in the dirt, 4-3 kind of right end, whatever, you know, at Auburn. I honestly think it's normal and probably good, you know, to sit a young kid when he's transitioning like that. You know, and Tano is always going to have the physical attributes to dominate. You know, I mean, if he's matched up, especially against, you know, some of these tackles now with all of these injuries are just primed to get run over by guys like him. You know, but he's probably just not there. And that's not a bad thing. I think that they might have overdrafted him a bit, you know, in the second round. But that clearly means that they see a ton of, you know, potential and upside, whatever you want to call it, in him. You know, and they're probably just not trying to rush it. You know, because there's not a huge need to rush him right now.
For sure, I agree, and that's kind of what I was thinking whenever he asked that question. But I did think it was an interesting question nonetheless. But I kind of see Tano in that same realm of Patrick Mahomes, kind of project guy that needs to chill. I mean, he probably won't be sitting as long as Mahomes could be, but
he's making a contribution on special teams right now, so it's not necessarily like he's chopped liver.
Another question that Mark asked on Twitter, thanks for the questions, Mark, by the way. He asked if the Chiefs should go after that cornerback Byron Maxwell. And so that makes me wonder if the Chiefs should go after anybody on the trade deadline, which is on Tuesday, I believe, Tuesday at 3 o'clock Central. If the Chiefs should go after anybody, and if there's anybody on the team that maybe they could flip for a pick or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think right now that that the Chiefs have a lot of capital to be making a lot of trades. Maybe you'll see a player for player swap or a conditional pick type of thing. I don't see the Chiefs going out and making any big splashy moves, even though I do think this is an all-in type of year. Reason being, if you look at the standings in the NFL right now, the only teams that are really like out of it are, you know, you're talking San Francisco, Cleveland, but a lot of teams are still within kind of the realm of, hey, if we, you know, roll off a bunch of wins, we can maybe still find that wild card spot. So they're not going to be willing to part with the guys that could really help the Chiefs team out. It just doesn't look like it's one of those years where I think the trade deadline will even be that active for many teams. I think maybe you could see some more San Francisco guys getting offloaded, and maybe Cleveland tries to acquire more draft picks. I don't know why they would right now. They're just a mess of an organization. And I don't see any big flashy things happening for KC, unfortunately, as much as I would like them.
Yeah, me neither. I think that they could make a move if, you know, Brett Veach, had his eye on a guy or something, but I just don't see it happening. And they've already invested conditional picks in Ragland and Irving, so they're probably done. But as far as Maxwell is concerned, he got cut, actually, so they could just straight up sign him if, like, they were willing to fork up the money. I'm not sure if Byron Maxwell is really even worth bringing in, you know, minus like Terrence Mitchell or Marcus Peters going down. You know, I mean, he got cut for a reason. I know he was part of the like Legion of Boom for a second, right? But you know, I mean, he's not Richard Sherman and never was, so. I think that they could maybe sign him if they were just trying to maximize their cap space, but that like rolls over, and so it wouldn't really be advantageous just to bring someone in to bring them in.
Yeah, and really the cap space is going to be the problem, because the Chiefs are reported at just over $3 million right now, and Byron Maxwell's owed money in offset, and the Dolphins are going to look for a team that signs him to pay that, and I believe that's over $4 million. So the Chiefs would have to somehow make cap to make this signing happen. I don't see it. I really don't see it. I feel like if they sign anyone who's released, there have been some rumors floating around today that Anquan Boldin wants to be traded or released from his contract and unretire and come back and play. I could see him wanting to come to a contender like KC and trying to win a ring. But again, I don't know that the contract issues with him either. So that could be out of the question as far as offset money is concerned. If the Chiefs are probably not going to be doing anything short of an injury happening this Monday versus the Broncos.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I just don't think that they're going to go after anybody. I think that they still like the personnel that they got, and I think that they're still banking on the return of these injured guys like Nelson and stuff, and possibly Tom Bahali. So And I think they feel comfortable with DeMarcus Robinson and all that, to where they don't, they probably don't need to go out and get a receiver. So the only thing I could see the Chiefs doing is maybe, I mentioned this in an article the other day, maybe flipping somebody like Ramique Wilson for a draft pick. If there was an interested suitor, I mean, there'd have to be an interested party first, but Ramique Wilson to me is probably going to get cut because he doesn't even, he's never even active anymore. So
I'd send him to the Eagles. They have a need at linebacker right now with Jordan Hicks going out. The Chiefs and the Eagles have had a good history as far as trades are concerned. The coach is familiar with him. And, you know, if you think so little of Ramique Wilson that you have him, you know, healthy scratch, and that you've demoted him for some of these guys you've traded for, I think you can't be afraid of, you know, trading him to an opponent that you may face later on in the season if you make it all the way. So I think that that could be a good spot to flip Ramique if the interest is there. Obviously, it's got to be mutual, like you said, Wes.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up here. Before we finish up, I just wanted to ask you guys your quick game predictions. I know we're going to come out with our detailed predictions on Saturday on Chiefs Wire, but if you have to throw out a score for me and maybe like a quick bite, who you guys taking on Monday?
I don't have a score ready in my mind's eye quite yet for you, but look, here's a little primer for the game for you. The Chiefs are stinking it up in about every defensive category possible. So the Denver Broncos, even though they've really looked atrocious on offense the past few weeks, I think they're going to have a get-right game in some regards on the offensive side of the ball. The Chiefs are going to give up their yards, and, you know, unless they can get the pass rush right and the secondary playing some better football, you know, it's going to be one of those games where they're going to have to score a lot of points to win. The offense is playing great. The defense has to catch up to them.
Yeah, I think that this is, in a lot of ways, a really do-or-die game for the Chiefs. You know, I mean, coming off of two losses, you know, both of which they probably could have won to be 7-0 right now. You know, and to lose to Oakland and have that division win streak snapped, and you know, I mean, just losing to Oakland in general sucks. So I'm actually really looking out for the Chiefs defense to really show out, especially Justin Houston, because he always does against the Broncos. You know, and with it being at Arrowhead on a Monday night, you know, coming off of two losses where the Chiefs roster is objectively, for the first time in like 3 or 4 years, better than the Broncos, you know, and that's huge. And, you know, the Chiefs secondary had good luck against Semien last year. You know, they always bring the heat against Denver. So I'm looking at like, I'll call it 31-10 Chiefs.
That's a pretty big score, but, yeah, I like your confidence there. I'm kind of with you there that if we're going to sit there and say that the Broncos could have a bounce-back game on offense, then, you know, what's the stop the Chiefs from having a bounce-back game on defense? I mean, I feel like that one is more likely to happen just because the Chiefs' defense has been good this season, and it just had a hiccup, you know? They were in a bad situation. They had two tough games in 5 days. I mean, you know, they retired, and stuff just didn't go right for them. So I hope that Bob Sutton can adjust and the defense can improve a little bit this week with or without Steven Nelson. We'll see. But either way, I don't have much faith in Semien and the Broncos offense to put up a ton of points. I think that they'll score a lot of field goals this week. My score prediction, I haven't come up with an exact one, but I was thinking around like 26-16 or 27-19 or somewhere around that mark, because I think both teams might score a lot of field goals, but the Chiefs will just edge it out because their offense is just better, and I think their defense with 11 days of rest will be able to, you know, pick it back up.
Hey, and one more thing before we go. Don't be a bum out there, guys. Don't boo for Jamal Charles.
Please don't boo Jamal Charles.
He's a member of the Chiefs kingdom. And
dude was trying to get a job.
He deserves your respect, even if he's playing for the other side now. So don't boo the man. In fact, I'm probably going to be wearing his jersey. You don't have to do that, but, you know, don't boo the man.
Yeah, don't boo Jamal Charles, or else we'll boo you. that's it for you guys this week. So we'll see you guys next week with another pod. Hit us up on Twitter and ask us questions about the game, and check out our stuff on Chiefs Wire. And otherwise, enjoy the game on Monday night, and we'll talk to you guys later. We'll be right back.